This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by
Geppetto Pickups, GeppettoGuitars.com. Guitar players are always searching for the tone that will define their playing identity. Geppetto Pickups' wide spectrum of tones and sonic colors inspire and instill a newfound confidence in the player that comes from having amazing tone. Go to GeppettoGuitars.com. We'll give your guitar its voice, but you'll make it sing.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
Okay, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show. This is episode 343. And the reason I want you to know that is because if you haven't heard episode 342, you should go back and listen to that and then come on back and listen to this. Because this is part two of Andy Elidort's favorite records of all time. Excuse me. We were originally going to just do top 10, but in Andy fashion, you can't just do that. And when we were texting, I said, you know, let's do your top 10 favorite albums. He goes, top 10? He goes, can we do top 10 and then 90 honorable mentions? So we're going to go ahead and do the rest. It's not 90. But we are going to get up to about 60, I think. So check this out. This is the rest of Andy Elidort's favorite albums of all time and why. We don't just say that they are. We explore. You're going to dig it. If you haven't listened to 342, go do that. Then come on back. Listen to 343. Here's me and Andy.
All right. Are we ready to go into the next phase?
Yeah, let's go into the next phase.
You're just going to hang up on me. I wouldn't blame you. All right, very quickly, let's go through these. The next one on my list is Decade by Neil Young. Hmm. Because Neil Young is just way too important. And the thing about Decade is it was a compilation. You know, sort of the best of up to that point, which it says here it came out in 77, which I guess is possible. But, you know, started with this really old stuff, Down to the Wire, Burn, Mr. Soul, which is from Buffalo Springfield.
Right.
Broken Arrow, Expecting to Fly from his first record, the Jack Nitzsche production. You know, very, very creative. Nothing sounded like that, you know, and this really super creative solo songwriter stuff that just, there was nothing like it, you know, like the old Laughing Lady and The Loner, I'm a Child, Sugar Mountain. And then, you know, we get to the stuff that was on Everyone Knows This Is Nowhere, you know, Neil with Crazy Horse, which I loved when that came out in 71 or 70, you know, and I was 15. So Cinema Girl and Down by the River and Cowgirl in the Sand and I Believe in You. And this is then the songwriting just goes completely crazy, you know, after the Gold Rush. Like, is there a more distinct, unique song than that? Like, I don't think so. Helpless, Ohio, Old Man. Man Needs a Maid, way, way up there for me. Harvest, that song is insane. Heart of Gold, you know, you just keep going.
Yeah.
And then the fun thing about Decade is it takes you deeper, you know, more current. So it has Winter Long, Deep Forbidden Lake, Like a Hurricane, Cortez the Killer, and ends with Long May You Run. So you go from, so I would tell anybody if they don't know it, you know, and you want Neil, like in one package. Decade takes you from Down to the Wire and Expecting to Fly and Mr. Soul, like all the way to Like a Hurricane and Cortez the Killer, you know. So
in so many respects he was proto punk, proto grunge.
What I would say about that is, and maybe you've heard this, you know, some people consider the first John Lennon Plastic Ono Band album, which I actually forgot to put on my list, as the first punk album, because there's no production. It's like zero production value. Mm-hmm. And everything's just live, like one take. And opens with Instant Karma, you know, which the whole idea of that was, let's write it, record it in a day and put it out tomorrow.
Right.
Like, why should we wait to get it mastered? And then the record comes out 3 or 4 months later.
Right.
You know, you don't remember like how you felt.
And one of the greatest drum sounds.
Insane. Unbelievable.
But
in that way, and it was the same period of time. Mm-hmm. So that was 1970. Was Plastic Ono Band. And so, yeah, you know, and then Birth of the Singer, like the solo singer-songwriter, troubadour, acoustic guitar, James Taylor, like just a guy. Like we're coming out of the band thing.
Yeah.
You know, we started with just the guy, right, with Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is about the band.
Came right back to it.
And then it came back to like the guy.
Yeah.
And it's about the guy. And so like a song like Man Needs a Maid, or After the Gold Rush. That's just a guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here's this song I wrote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sugar Mountain.
I mean, pick it up off the ground after a year. Okay. Number two on my part two list is Basement Tapes, Dylan and the Band.
Great record.
Because I hadn't talked about the band, how important they were.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love about the Basement Tapes is the same thing. It's live. It's just these guys playing. They don't fucking care. You know, it wasn't really meant to be an album. I don't believe. You know, I think that Bob was looking for guys to play with. This is my understanding of it. Recorded in the summer of 67. And, you know, you have you know, some incredible things like Tears of Rage and You Ain't Going Nowhere and Don't Tell You Henry, This Wheel's on Fire, you know. So it just captures, Basement Tapes captures an incredible group, the band, and an incredible artist, Bob, you know, finding each other. And I love it for that. Next is Bob Dylan's Nashville Skyline, another record that actually got panned a bit at the time because it was Bob's comeback record after his motorcycle accident, and he sort of altered his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was criticized for that, and it's insane to me because, you know, 69, I'm 13, and I heard it and I was completely killed by it.
What was the radio song from that?
Lay, Lady, Lay.
I thought so. Okay. Yeah, you know, and when I heard that, first time I heard that in 69, I didn't know it was him.
Right.
But I thought the voice was great.
Oh, amazing, you know. And it opens with him and Johnny Cash. If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, you know,
mm-hmm.
where the wind is heavy on the borderline, remember me to the one who lives there. You know, she once was the true love of mine. You know, him and Johnny Cash. So still at that time, it was a little like, why is Bob doing a record with Johnny Cash, like someone so rooted in like traditional country.
Mm-hmm.
But it's brilliant.
It's not a far stretch, though.
And then Lay Lady Lay is amazing.
I think it's a great track. I still think it stands up.
The songwriting is incredible. Mm-hmm. And I Threw It All Away is, you know, when you get the emotional Bob, like the vulnerable emotional Bob, he's better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not known for that. You know, he's known for sort of a different take on things. That sort of, you know, arms distance removed, cynical
warnings.
Yeah, but then when he decides to not be that, you know, he writes, to make you feel my love, you know. So I threw it all away. It's ridiculous. And tonight I'll be staying here with you, you know, so up there. All right. Number four on this list is Hendrix again. Hendrix in the West. Hendrix in the West is a record, though, that many people don't know. Posthumous. One of the first, actually, that came out after Hendrix died. I think it came out in 71. It has the greatest live version of Red House ever, which is May 25th, I believe, 69, San Diego Sports Arena. It's just nothing like it. It's unbelievable. And opens with him at Isle of Wight doing the Queen, God Save the Queen, you know. Into Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And it's got his version of Johnny Be Good, and Little Wing, like, amazing. And so what we didn't know, and Voodoo Child, like the most phenomenal live Voodoo Child. So it's the best live Voodoo Child. It's the best live Little Wing. It's the best live Red House. So In the West is nuts. And it was a little bit of a lie calling it In the West, because they say that Little Wing and Voodoo Child aren't from Albert Hall 69, because they weren't supposed to use that stuff because of their contractual fight that's still going on 50 years later with the guys that filmed that performance at Albert Hall. So on the original record, it's credited as a different venue, like on the West Coast, but it's not. Or it's, I can't remember, but it's an incorrect credit. And then when they reissued In the West, those songs aren't on there. So that's a shame. Okay, next one. B.B. King, live at the Regal. It's a pretty obvious one for B.B. King fans, but and it's the addendum to that is an album, the first B.B. King album ever bought, Completely Well, which had The Thrill Is Gone on it. So I saw him play The Thrill Is Gone on, like, the Mike Douglas show, something, when I was 12, like in 68 or 69, whatever year it was. And that was a big, it was like almost like seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Seeing B.B. King on TV play Thrill Is Gone and solo, you know, I said to my mom, like, can you buy me, like, a guitar like that? I swear I'll learn how to play that way. Like,
see, for me, it's Cook County Jail.
Well, I love that too. Yeah,
so, I love that record. That record's so raw.
But I heard Sweet Little Angel on the radio from Live at the Regal. And a lot of these I'm referring to, like I said, I didn't know. I didn't have any money to buy a record, so my discovery of the song was because somebody decided to play it on the radio. You know, and anyhow, so that's B.B. King. Next, Albert King, Live Wire Blues Power. You could put any Albert King album on this list. They're all amazing.
They are.
The first one I bought was not this. The first one I bought was Years Gone By, which has As the Years Go Passing By on it. I think it does. I know it has Killing Floor on it. And it's phenomenal. But Live Wire Blues Power has the song Blues Power, which is, I mean, if you had to pick one song, the definitive, like, hey, you can only hear one Albert King song to know what Albert King is about. To me, it would have to be Blues Power. The playing is amazing. And then he does this rap. that I was in my second interview with Steve Ray Vaughan. We started to talk about that album, but we started talking about Albert King and then Live Wire Blues Power. And Steve started doing the rap, and then we did it together, like in unison, you know. The blues, everybody understands the blues. Everybody from one time or another gets the blues. Now you take that little baby who's laying in the cradle. Can't get that milk bottle fast enough. Now he gets to kicking and crying, all going on, messing up the baby bed. He got the blues. Now you got this girl, she got her boyfriend, and he got a brand new GTO. And she wanted to be with him every time he cranked it up. Going out where all the guys and gals be, going down to the soda shop. So she's getting ready to go out this one particular night. And her mother says, daughter, you can't go out tonight. You went out last night. That's too many nights in a row. Two nights in a row, by the way. So she goes in the room, fastens the door, you know, won't answer the phone, won't eat. She got the blues. Now, some people call them the reds, the pinks. By the way, I don't know anyone that calls them the reds or the pinks. But when you get down to it, it's the old-fashioned country blues. Now, I ain't seen my mean squeeze in 10 long weeks today. So you know I got them. And then he laughs and starts playing, and it's, like, insane.
Mm-hmm.
Completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Stevie sat there, we did, like, together, which was fun. All right, Freddie King, number 7. Freddie King sings because... that was up there with my introduction to Freddie King, mixed with an album called A Bonanza of Instrumentals.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
He's got his foot up on the park bench.
Yeah.
And when I was first getting to know Jimmy Vaughn, we went out to dinner, me and him and Robin, who at the time was his girlfriend. She's been his wife now for all these years, years and years. And Double Trouble, and we were at this restaurant in Austin, and they gave us our own room, and it was all blues that was coming in over the, you know, the music, and there was a bunch of Freddie King instrumentals, and Jimmy was so into it, you know, and he goes, yeah, was this on that record where he had his foot up on the park bench? That's a bonanza of instrumentals.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie King Sings has a song that Clapton says was his introduction to Freddie King, which was I Love the Woman. And, you know, he said, Clapton said, like, that was a huge moment for him hearing 1961 is when Freddie King. And it has Have You Ever Loved a Woman on it. So, you know, that's the one for me, if you're going to pick a Freddie King album. But Bonanza of Instrumentals, you know, has Hideaway and San Jose and Sensation. And it's just an endless amount of incredible instrumentals, you know, that you could mention.
Out of the three Kings, he had the most interesting career, I think, in the sense that he had that period of all the instrumentals, and he was making some real hits with those instrumentals. Then he started to sing, and then in the 70s he got funky, you know.
Well, it's that little bit younger that he was. He's like, kind of like Albert Collins in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Albert King and B.B. King, you know, sort of created a template that was their own. Albert did stretch out, though.
Yeah, he got funky.
And so did B.B. I mean, you can't say B.B. didn't. He lived longer than any of them.
That's true.
And did everything, pretty much, you know, that you could do.
Yeah.
You know, he did that great version of Ain't Nobody Home. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
That Bonnie Raitt did also. Alan Toussaint song, maybe. I'm not sure.
What did you think of that Riding with the King record?
I liked it. It wasn't as much fun as I wanted it to be honest. When you have Clapton and B.B. King.
Mm-hmm.
Only because, you know, B.B. had made so many records that were stronger to me. Like, for example, his two live records with Bobby Blue Bland. You know, like, records are nuts. They're nuts. When was the last time you heard the version of Going Down Slow live?
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Blue Bland and B.B. King. If you have, in a long time. What's funny is it's so off the cuff, they don't even know who's going to sing which verse. So they kind of step on each other and then let the other guy do it. And they're cracking up. And then Bobby sings a verse that I didn't even know existed in that song. And so that's the only reason I'd Riding with the King is not, you know, what can I say? You know, B.B. made a lot of records. I like Indianola Mississippi Seeds.
Yeah, that's a great record.
Weird record, you know.
Yeah.
And then the early ones, which eventually they came out as compilations, Best of B.B. King Volume 1 and 2. And those have 3 O'Clock in the Morning and Beautician Blues and You Upset Me Baby, you know, like early 50s B.B. The original Rock Me Baby, you know, like, I mean, Rock Me Baby, the original version, it's funky, man. And, you know, boom, bam, bam, like the groove is so. All right, we must continue.
Yes.
Billy Cobham Spectrum, because of what we mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
Cobham was in my vision orchestra. Nobody played drums like that. So, you know, he was the king of jazz fusion drumming, you know, and will forever deserves to be regarded as the king, like the guy who completely rewrote the book on what drumming is. Mm-hmm. Nobody played like that at all.
Yeah.
Or sounded that way. And he did Spectrum at Electric Lady. And so the sound's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Nuts. Beautiful sounding album. And there were drum solos on that record, little short solos.
Yep.
And then his writing, you know, his writing is beautiful. Red Baron, Les Liz, Stratus.
Stratus, yeah.
I mean, Spectrum is nuts. And Ben Tommy Bone. Yeah. All right, so that rolls naturally into Jeff Beck, Blow by Blow. But for me personally, the real thing with Jeff was Beck Ola was my discovery of Jeff in 68 when I was 12, which to me still is the greatest singing Rod Stewart ever did in his life, on All Shook Up and Jailhouse Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish Boots, and you know, we used to play all those songs, and Rice Pudding, you know, Jeff's playing is nuts, and Hendrix stole that lick, you know, from Rice Pudding for the end of In From the Storm. I don't know if you know that.
No.
He ends I was still in overdue. From the Storm, you know, Hendrix ends it. You know,
so I never realized that.
A very generous lifting of his good friend, Jeff Beck. They were very good friends.
Yeah.
So But Blow by Blow I picked just because there was nothing still. Like, it was basically his version of Spectrum. It was, I'm a rock guitar player. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play fusion. I'm going to do it at Air Studios in Switzerland, I believe, with
George Martin. Yeah.
And the album is just beautiful. Like, it's it's just a towering masterpiece. Yeah. Okay.
Wait, next. Where do you sit on Wired?
Okay, well, so what I wrote was Blow by Blow / Truth / Beckola / Wired.
Okay.
Because Wired is amazing.
I love it. It's my favorite Jeff Beck record.
And that's Nerado. So, like, yeah. Nerado, Michael Walden comes in and he's writing.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's writing, whatever the name
Lead
of that song is.
Lead Boots. He wrote Lead Boots. Lead Boots.
There's that drumming at the beginning of Lead Boots.
Yep. Head for the Backstage Pass.
Head for Backstage Pass. Air. I'd have to look at
Play with Me.
Play with Me. Oh, Come Dancing.
Come Dancing. Yep. Jesus Christ. And that version of Goodbye Pork Pie Hat
is like the greatest.
Oh, ever. My God. Oh, my God. I mean, Mingus wrote him a letter saying that it was the best version he had ever heard of the song.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Wired is truly amazing. I had the disc I have is so early that it doesn't have this trails on where it says Jeff Beck Wired.
Like, oh, really? The picture doesn't have the
months. Within a couple of months, like the picture of Jeff has the trails on it. But Jeff Beck Wired at the top
doesn't have just it.
Letters with nothing. But then within a few months, they redid the cover and they made Wired have the trails.
Wow,
on it.
I got to go back and look at mine. I have every format it ever came out in.
A track?
Yeah, I have a track. I have a couple of different vinyl versions. I've got a cassette version. I've got an 8-track version, CD version. Blue Wind.
Yeah.
That's Jan Hammer. Bop, bop. Bowdy, 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 bowdy. Yeah, man.
So, where we used to play all those. But Love is Green is the one I was thinking of. It's just
Love is Green.
Like, it's nuts.
Yeah, that's an Ovation acoustic and his Strat. He's doubling it on that.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So, all killer. Okay. So, number 10 on my addendum list. And again, you can just hang up anytime you get sick of me.
That ain't happening.
John Scofield. Who's Who, mm-hmm. With Rough House and Bar Talk as the other two albums. Mm-hmm. At that point. But Who's Who's the first one I bought, and it's just incredible. Nobody played like John, and he was a new voice in jazz guitar who was bending strings and is influenced by B.B. King and Jimi Hendrix as anybody else. So he was a lot different than Wes Montgomery.
Yeah.
And I first heard him, like many people did, on the George Duke Billy Cobham Band Live at Macho album. So that's coming out of the Cobham thing. You know, I love Cobham. And, you know, after Spectrum, and then after Mahavishnu broke up, he made these really amazing albums, Crosswinds, and two albums, Funky Thigh Sings and Life and Times. Scofield's on those records. But I believe before those two records, or concurrent, whatever, because it was 76, was George Duke Billy Cobham Band Live at Mantra. And what an insane band. It was Alfonso Johnson on bass. It was like 21 or something. And Scofield's 24. And, like, looks like James Taylor. And I never heard anybody play like that. You know, like, this guy's playing rock fusion. But then they start swinging, and he's playing bebop. And this is terrific. I was talking to John about that record not that long ago, and he goes, oh, I suck on that record. He's like, I didn't know how to play. And I'm like, whatever. Okay, so Scofield's Who's Who. Rough House is great. It's from before Who's Who. It's a studio album. His first album is Live, John Scofield Live, on Enja. And then an album from 80 called Bar Talk is incredible. Okay, number 11, Speedy West and Jimmy Bryant. Stratosphere of Boogie. When I heard that shit for the first time, I was just completely floored. There was words that could be used to, you know, and it was really early. We're talking about...
I had a conversation with Red Volkert about that record, and that was a record for him as well.
How cool is that? Hold on a second. You know what? It's weird. It's not coming up. So let me just put in Speedy West, Jimmy Bryant. And then there's another record called Swinging on a String, which is like the same kind of period of time.
Yep.
I'm not finding what I want here, but it doesn't really matter. Anyway, and I asked Jeff Beck in an interview, I said, you know, were you influenced by Speedy West and Jimmy Bryant? And he cracked up and he said, basically all I'm trying to do is play like both of them, all the time on all my songs. Because, you know, he plays slide.
Right.
And then he can do this country fast picking really clean shit that, you know, has the Les Paul influence too.
Right.
So it was just funny because he goes, yeah, that's how I'm trying to play.
Yeah. And a dash of Scotty Moore.
Oh, well, you know, and Cliff Gallup and all
that. Yeah,
and
Cliff Gallup, right, yeah.
You know, the rockabilly guys, you know.
For sure.
All right. Number 12 on this, Jethro Tull, Benefit.
Wow. Okay. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday. Would you say that Jethro Tull is a prog band?
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting. Absolutely. I never looked at them as a prog band.
What's wrong with you?
Not, we can hear you for another 8 hours about that. But no, I always saw them. I said, they're a rock band. They're not a prog band. I don't know.
Well, I don't know how you could say that. Because first of all, right from the beginning, like from This Was with Nick Abrams before Martin Barr came in for the second record, Stand Up, there are so many different influences in their music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm picking Benefit because I just, that album completely crushed me. I couldn't believe it. I love Stand Up and still do. Nothing Is Easy and Fat Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Barrett, you know, they're playing a Bach piece. But the star for me of that band was Glenn Cornick, the bass player. And Benefit holds another place in my heart because they fired Glenn after Benefit. Because the record after Benefit's Aqualung. And I was so mad about them firing Glenn that I didn't like Aqualung. And everybody was like, hey, did you hear Aqualung? I'm like, fuck that shit. They suck. And then after hearing, you know, the song Aqualung or, you know, Cross-Eyed Mary. Like, how amazing is that?
Yeah,
like,
really.
Amazing. And, you know, whatever the... Oh, Locomotive Breath. You know, shortly thereafter, I'm like, I think I have to admit that, like, Aqualung is kind of a good record. But I was so mad that they fired Glenn. But Stand Up is, that's very progressive music. And, I mean, to cry you a song. It was such classical overtones music that it was, that's what made it progressive. Because progressive rock, at its birth, that was the one of the things that it, that's the English thing, first of all, progressive rock is an English thing, really. You know, you could call Vanilla Fudge a progressive rock band, but, you know, not really in the terms that became understood as progressive rock later, which were epitomized by King Crimson and Yes and ELP, you know? So what's there? Well, the thing that's there to me, and Procol Harum. So Procol Harum had it with Whiter Shade of Pale with this theme that comes straight out of classical music, you know? So those classical undertones and overtones in the music, combined with some of the jazz adventurousness, like 21st Century Schizoid Man or Court of the Crimson King. I mean, that's King Crimson's first album. Or ELP, their first album, you know. Although the big ELP record for me, and it's on here later, is Tarkus. Because the song Tarkus is nuts. It's nuts. Completely nuts. I tried to learn it on guitar, and it was impossible. And I did an interview with Yngwie Malmsteen, and he goes, oh, yeah, I tried to learn it on guitar, too. Yes, it's impossible. Like, it's all fourths. And on the guitar, it's like it's so hard. And it's these giant stretches, and, you know. But so Tall was progressive rock, definitely. And Benefit, because of songs like With You, every song, With You There to Help Me, Nothing to Say, To Cry a Song, Playing Time is insane. Society, You're a Woman is nuts. Like, forget it. Forget it. That song is so beautiful. So Benefit's way up there for me. All right. Next one. Number 13. So it's only as far as we've gotten in 2 hours plus. Leslie West, Mountain. The first Leslie West album before there was a band called Mountain. His first album is called Mountain. And many people don't know that because their introduction to Mountain was Mississippi Queen.
Right.
Which is on Climbing, the first Mountain.
Right.
But I knew this album before that because my girlfriend, when I was 15 in 1971, had this album. And I'd heard Mississippi Queen, it was out by then. And I also had heard They Are on Woodstock 2. Although I don't know if Woodstock 2 was out by then. It might not have been. So anyway, I mean, this album... to this day, I mean, I love every freaking song on this record. Let's start again.
So you interviewed him, right?
Interviewed him a bunch of times. I became friends with him.
Yeah.
Amazing. And he was the coolest.
He was.
Like I say, he's another Jew from Queens like me. He was born 3 miles down from where I was born.
Jackson Heights, right? Yeah.
I was born in Fort Totten, and lived in Forest Hills, and then he moved to either East Meadow or something like that, Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
But on this album, Blind Man, Better Watch Out, Baby I'm Down, Dreams of Milk and Honey is like the greatest song ever. Mm-hmm. Every song in this album is nuts. He does his version of This Wheel's on Fire is amazing. And then the songs that no one knows, Look to the Wind and Because You Are My Friend. Look to the Wind is unbelievable. And you know, Howard Stern became good friends with Leslie. Yeah. And Howard's favorite song is Because You Are My Friend. And he asked him about that. And so, anyway, that's the next one. Okay, ready for the next one?
Go for it.
Charlie Christian, the genius of electric guitar.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is why I can't do 10, okay? I can't do it, you know. I heard Charlie Christian, genius of electric guitar, and it came out. And I had heard some of this music earlier, Benny Goodman, you know, when I was younger. But nobody played like Charlie Christian, and every single song is like a 1,000 on a scale of 1 to 2. Rose Room, 7 Come 11, Tim Tiltime Special, Gone with Wet Wind, Grand Slam, Six Appeal, Holy Cats, Royal Garden Blues, As Long as I Live, Benny's Bugle, Breakfast Food, forget it. Airmail Special, every one of these is the top. Brilliant. And he was in his 20s. Just beyond brilliant. You want to learn about jazz guitar? Get The Genius of Electric Guitar, Charlie Christian, and you'll be busy for a while. okay. Number 16, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, A Night in Tunisia. So I'm going to bring it up for a second. The reason I would pick this one over any number of other Art Blakey records. Hold on a second. I have to do this one because it won't come up. Is because of the band. It was when I heard it, it was when I was still discovering Lee Morgan. So it's Lee Morgan is in the band. He's a teenager, I think. Wayne Shorter on sax. So this is before they started playing with Miles, or Wayne started playing with Miles. 1960, Bobby Timmons on piano. And it's just ridiculous. And there are so many Art Blakey and Jazz Messengers albums. Everyone is phenomenal. And Art Blakey's drumming is just completely nuts. The sound of his drums, the way he plays. And if you were to ask Ginger Baker, if he were alive today, or Mitch Mitchell, like, who's, like, the most influential jazz drummer in you? I know that Ginger would say, first, Baby Dobbs, but he would say Art Blakey. And Elvin, of course. Elvin Jones is big with those guys. But Blakey, these records are amazing. And A Night in Tunisia, it just opened up this world to me of... Really, it's post-bop. It's still hard bop, but mm-hmm. it's... and the songs are nuts, mm-hmm. you know. And the title track, so... okay, next one is Lee Morgan as a solo artist. 2 albums, The Sidewinder, which was a huge hit. Like, the biggest hit that I think Blue Note ever had at the time. They realized that they could make a jazz record that was going to sell 1 million copies, which hadn't happened before. I mean, other than maybe Kind of Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it says, here it says, trumpeter Lee Morgan's The Sidewinder is a landmark of 60s soul jazz that has gone on to influence generous of artists, and one big reason is the popularity of the title track, which crossed over to pop charts. And so it was a pop hit for a jazz trumpet player to have a pop hit. It's crazy. Playing jazz, because it's nothing, you know, he's not watering this shit down.
Right. You know? It's not Chuck Mangione.
No, which, I mean, Chuck, great too.
But great.
But that was commercial music.
Very much so.
But I mean, my favorite, among my favorite, Lee Morgan, and Lee wrote, Lee was an incredible composer. So a handful of my other favorite songs that he ever wrote are on this record, which are Totem Pole and Gary's Notebook and Hocus Pocus. And Totem Pole and Gary's Notebook are both just, they're just unbelievable. So anyway, and you know, today it's kind of cool because there might be like 40 Lee Morgan records you can listen to now. So do that. Next one. Again, if you hung up already, then, you know, I'm talking to myself. Muddy Waters, Best of Muddy Waters. And I have to say, you know, the reason I'm going through all this, and thank you for giving me the room, is because I can't, even though I picked the top 10, I can't say that these other records were less important to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they are just as important to me as any of them. And so in my discovery of Muddy Waters, you know, because he'd been around for so long, I mean, Best of Muddy Waters came out in 57, I'm one, so I didn't discover that record until the 70s, you know. And so what's on this record? You know, I Just Want to Make Love to You, Long Distance Call, Louisiana Blues, Honeybee, Rolling Stone, I'm Ready, Hoochie Coochie Man, She Moves Me, Standing Around Crying, Still a Fool, I Can't Be Satisfied. So everything you want to know about Muddy Waters, you know, is right here. Okay, the next one, Howlin' Wolf, London Sessions. We had heard about it because Clapton was on it, you know, which was extremely important. there it is. And Clapton's playing on it is amazing. Unbelievable. And then you've got Steve Winwood and Bill Wyman and Charlie Watts. And it's just great. It's like you got Wolf, and then he's with all these, you know, skinny English guy.
Yep. That's a great record.
Rockin' Daddy, Philip Church on bass, Ain't Superstitious, Sitting on Top of the World, every song.
Yeah.
Every song's at 10.
Then we ended up with a bunch of London Sessions records after that of other artists.
There's a couple. Yeah, there's a Muddy one.
There's a Chuck Berry.
Yeah. But they're not as good as...
No, they're not.
As the Wolf.
Yeah, one. They're not as good.
And Wolf, they include that false start where he's teaching them how to play Red Rooster. And it's the coolest thing ever, you know? Because they don't know how to play it. And someone's talking, Clapton or something, and they go, well, why don't you play it with us? We can follow you. You know, because they were just got so confused by, you know, that like the lick goes three times or something before you change, like when to stay longer on the one and when not to.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing as fuck. Okay, the next one is Little Walter, Best of Little Walter. I didn't discover Little Walter till the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the Best of Little Walter and oh shit, I hit the wrong button. Best of Little Walter has everything that you want, like just like with Muddy. Like you want to know about the greatest, really, to me, blues harmonica playing, Chicago blues harmonica playing, imaginable. It's Little Walter, and it's on this record.
Mm-hmm.
So My Babe, Sad Hours, You're So Fun. You're So Fun. You know, we played, ultimately I was in a band, we played almost every Little Walt song. You're so fun. Let me love you all the time. You are one of the things that made me yeah, like in the Myers Brothers, and you learn a lot about how to play guitar correctly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mean Old World, Off the Ball, Blues with a Feeling.
Yeah.
But there's nothing better than that. Can't Hold Out Much Longer, You Better Watch Yourself, Blue Light, Tell Me Mama. Just forget it. It's like, it's so strong. This is ridiculous. Okay. We're making progress. Johnny Winter.
Which one?
Well, I put Second Winter first.
Okay.
And my next one is the studio album, Johnny Winter and Studio, not Johnny Winter and Live. Johnny Winter and Live is a fun record, but I feel like it has, it's a little bit of a mess. And I am tainted because Johnny told me that he hated Johnny Winter and Live. Most successful record he ever made, and his record that he liked the least. And the reason he liked it the least is he said he could hear that he was on heroin.
Hmm.
And it was the only thing he could hear when he listened to it, is that he hears a guy who's on heroin. And he couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
But he loved the studio album with the black and white cover with the original version of Rock and Roll Hoochie Kid. And that album is truly phenomenal. And it has, there's a Traffic song, which you might know, called No Time to Live.
Mm-hmm.
And it has Johnny's version of No Time to Live. And he sort of outs Steve Winwood with his vocal, which is, you can imagine, a difficult thing to do. It's insane. It's nuts. Yeah. I played it for Alan Paul, my co-writer on Texas Flood, Stevie Book, and he's in the band Friends of the Brothers with me. And I played it for him on a recent trip over the summer. We had a bunch of gigs and we were carpooling together. And he was like, I've never heard Johnny Winter sing like this or play a song like this. Like, he couldn't believe it. And so, anyhow, Second Winter I picked because it was my introduction to Johnny because of Highway 61.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you know, then beyond that, it's just truly amazing. So, anyone who's interested, if you get the Legacy, Sony Legacy Expanded Edition of Second Winter now, it's got my liner notes that I wrote from interviews I did with Johnny and Edgar and Tommy Shannon and Uncle John Turner, specifically for that release. And then it has a bonus second disc that's live 1970 Royal Albert Hall, Johnny with Tommy and Unc. And it's I played it for Dickie Betts and he got on his knees and was bowing in front of it.
Hmm.
And he looked at me and he goes, man, I knew Johnny was good. I didn't know he was this good.
Hmm.
Okay. Next record. The Allman Brothers. Live at Fillmore East.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be denied. What are you going to say? You know, they created something that didn't exist before. A style of music. Two guitar players.
It's true.
Playing off each other. In harmony.
Yeah.
Like Greg's vocal. Yep. It's not Southern Rock. You could call it Southern Rock. It got tagged as Southern Rock.
Later, yeah.
But it's not what became known as Southern Rock, you know, which there's music that fits that title better.
Well, everyone that would come after who were trying to emulate that, those were the Southern Rockers.
Well, and Phil Walden, you know, had a record company and signed bands and was smart and created a thing.
Yeah.
That he could sell, fill stadiums. You know, it'll be the Allman Brothers and Leonard Skinner and Marshall Tucker and Wet Willie and
Charlie Daniels.
You know, Charlie Daniels. And like those, that's what the 70s was all about.
Absolutely.
And that music was huge. And then it was actually pretty helpful to Willie Nelson because then Willie came in, you know, with On the Road Again, and he could slide right into that coming Cosmic Cowboy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes sense. But the Allman Brothers don't really fit that bill. And
no, they were what happened was they did what they did. It stayed original, and then everybody glommed off of that.
Yes. And so the Allman Brothers would never play a song like Can't You See? You know?
No.
Or Heard It in a Love Song, or, you know, 24 hours at a time. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with those songs. They're great.
Or Rockin' Into the Night, 38 Special.
Well, now you're really...
That's a Southern rock band, too.
That is really a stretch for me, but you're right. Yeah, you know. And then Skynyrd, I mean, you know... I love Skynyrd, and they're great, but...
I enjoyed those early records.
It's just not... It is, you know, the Allman Brothers took urban blues, Chicago, Bobby Blue Bland, and mix it with
Atlanta
modal jazz, you know, John Coltrane and Miles Davis, and and BB King, you know, like this weird mix of stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And nothing was like them. And then nobody had two drummers. Like the whole thing was like, you guys are not going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And Dickie told me that Dwayne was like, Dwayne's hero was Muhammad Ali. And Dwayne would say, we're going to be the biggest band like in the country, if not the world. And they were broke. And so I said to Dickie, what would everybody say when Dwayne said that? We would all just go, okay, you say so. But no one believed it, but he said Dwayne believed it. Dwayne was like, no, this is happening. And he was right. Okay, next one. Because now we're coming up on 2 hours. And thank you for your 3 hours.
3 hours.
Thank you for your time.
We are, you know, this is going to be a two-parter. I'm just letting you know. That's good. It's that much gold.
That's even crazy. Well, if you want to do right now, you can go, okay, hey, everyone, this is Mark David. You want to do that?
No. I'll cut it up. I'll do that
later.
I'll take care of it. I'll do it in post.
Well, then I'll add this. Hey, thanks for having me back on. For Part three, part four.
What do you got?
Part five. You can just drop those in. Thanks for having me on for part nine.
We'll just be my co-host and be over with.
Or you should just use your voice. It would be like, hey, thanks for having me on for part two. Believe it or not, fans, we are back with Andy Elder. Oh, my God. He's still talking. When we left Andy, he was talking, and apparently he's still talking like 2 months later. No one knows if he took a leak, got something to drink.
We don't know if he's eating.
Eat bite. We're not sure he's of this astral plane anymore. Okay. Number 22 on my extra list is the band Rock of Ages. Okay. So why is it Rock of Ages? Well, it's Rock of Ages because I can't pick between the band and, you know, the album called The Band and Big Pink. But if you pick Rock of Ages, it's got all those songs on it, which okay. is, and it's live.
Yeah. I would go with Big Pink, personally. But
Big Pink is amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a real soft spot for Rock of Ages. Because, like I said, it's got everything.
Yeah.
You know, Don't Do It, King Harvest, Caledonia Mission, Get Up Jake, W.S. Walcott, Stage Fright. I mean, it's got Stage Fright, which you don't have on the first two records.
Mm-hmm.
Night They Drove Dixie Down, Cross the Great Divide, Wheels on Fire, Rag Mama Rag, The Weight, Shape of Man, Unfaithful Servant. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could just pick that. Mm-hmm. Chet Paper, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I love Shape I'm In, and that song is so good.
We play it all the time.
Oh, it's such a good song.
Sometimes we open with it. I Shall Be Released, Up on Cripple Creek, Rocket Chair, the version of When I Pay My Master.
Oh, there's a song, When I Pay My Masterpiece. Did you ever hear Chris Whitley do that?
No, but I love Chris Whitley.
Oh, my God. Chris Whitley's version is so... It's haunting, much in the same, you know, Chris Whitley, everything he does is haunting, but.
I'm going to check it out because I love Chris Whitley.
Oh, yeah.
I like the album Den of Ecstasy a lot.
Yeah, that's a crazy record.
It's a crazy record.
Yeah.
Okay, so Number 23, Frank Zappa. Every Zappa record is hugely important to me. But the one, if I had to pick, believe it or not, is Absolutely Free. His second album. Because it's the one that I just listen to the most. Mm. And
Is Beefheart on that record?
Beefheart is not on Absolutely Free, no. Beefheart's on Hot Rounds.
That's right.
But Absolutely Free, I heard Freak Out in 66 because my buddy brought it to the sixth grade dance. And I thought it was amazing. And everyone else hated it besides me and my friend. But I love Freak Out, but it was really the next record, Absolutely Free. Plastic People, Oh Baby, Now You're Such a Drag. Duke of Prunes. I'm looking through the prunes in June, reveals your chest. The prunes I have for you, my dear, are real and very new. New prunes.
Love it.
And then at the end, it's going, and Frank goes, you see how it builds up? It's kind of like the Shirelles. And then somebody's going, or the Supremes. And then somebody is like Roy Scheider, that's going, baby, baby. So and then Colony Vegetable, you know, Invocation and Ritual Dance of the Young Pumpkin.
What was his fascination with pumpkins?
Well, it was his nickname for Gail.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he called her My Pumpkin.
I did not know that.
And if you look closely on the cover, I think it's on the back, but it might be on the front. There is a picture, and I think it's Gail that's behind Frank, and then in tiny letters it says My Pumpkin.
Okay.
So I believe that's what that's from. But it's also got Brown Shoes Don't Make It on it.
Love that track, man. That's the track right there.
Dickie Betts said that's his favorite Frank Zappa song.
Oh, wow. That's my favorite Frank Zappa song. Absolutely. And Black Napkins.
And he would make me put it on the bus. Dickie would say, play Brown Shoes Don't Make It. He knew every word. So that's kind of crazy, right? But along with Absolutely Free has to come Hot Rats, because of Peaches and Regalia and Gumbo Variations and Little Umbrellas and Son of Mr. Green Jeans, and every single thing that's on Hot Rats is totally brilliant, which is Frank's first solo album, I believe. It's not a Mother's album. And then Roxy and Elsewhere is probably the best band he ever had in his life.
With Flo and Eddie?
No.
Oh, no?
They're gone. Roxy and Elsewhere is with Napoleon Mercery, Brock, Ruth Underwood, Bruce Fowler, Tom Fowler, Chester Humphreys, and Ralph Humphreys and Chester Thompson on drums, and Napoleon Murphy Brock. The band is insane. It's completely insane. And George Duke.
What's the record with Flo and Eddie?
Well, there's a few. The concert I was supposed to go to, Mother's Live at the Fillmore East, June 6, 1971. The white cover with the pencil. That's the first Flo and Eddie record. And 200 Motels, that's Flo and Eddie.
Right.
And
Ringo Starr, too.
What's that?
Ringo Starr on 200 Motels, too, right?
And Just Another Band from L.A.
Another Band from L.A., okay. Yeah.
But if you get the expanded Mother's Alive at the Fillmore East, you get a lot of the songs that ended up on Just Another Band from L.A., which is amazing. Okay. There's a version of Billy the Mountain that they were doing that earlier.
Oh, wow.
So you got to hear the...
That's the period for me that really does it. I love that. And then, of course, later on, Zootalores.
Yes,
Zootalores. I love Zootalores.
And since you're on Zootalores, just this morning, I was listening to something called FZOZ. You know that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I give you a lot of credit for that. I didn't know that. Do you know the new one from Zagreb?
No.
Okay, so same tour, 1975, this small band that's on Black Napkins, which is the only appearance of that band on the Zootalores album. Andre Lewis on keyboards, Napoleon Murphy Brock, Roy Estrada, Ruth on it? I can't remember. And Frank. Was it a five-piece? Oh, Terry Bozzio. No.
Yeah, it's Terry Bozzio.
Band. No, Ruth. Five-piece band. Like, it's nuts to see Frank with a five-piece band. I saw that band in October 75 at Hofstra. And
at the Playhouse?
Yeah.
Wow. What a great room.
You can, I looked up Providence, Rhode Island from two nights before, October 24th. The Hofstra show is October 26th. Unfortunately, the audio version of that's on YouTube. The sound quality isn't good. But two nights before, October 24th, from Providence, the sound quality is excellent. But then FCOZ is that tour a little later. I think it's February of 76. In Australia, and then Zagreb is November of 75, and that just came out. It's unbelievable, and the sound quality is insane. So you got to hear it.
I got to check that out. Was he doing the panty rap around that time?
No, not yet.
Okay.
And then, of course, we're only in it for the money. I have to put, because that was just too huge, and we listened to that every day.
Yeah.
That got, yeah, I think already hung up. And every town must have a place for phony hippies. Me, psychedelic dungeons popping up on every street. Go to San Francisco. How I love you, Frisco.
What did you think of the Vi period, Zappa? Like,
I love it, ship
arriving too late to save a drowning witch.
I love it. My favorite Frank Zappa show I ever saw was November. November 81 at the Ritz.
Mm-hmm.
And then the keyboard player was a guy I went to college with, Tommy Morris.
That guy, yeah.
Tom Mariano.
Yeah.
So, no, that's an incredible period for the band. Incredible.
Jazz discharge party hats.
Yes. And what Steve did in that band is nothing short of, a towering achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And I met Steve then. So, he was 19 or 20 when I met him.
He's such a good guy.
Steve's the best, man.
He really is.
Okay. Number 24, Bud Powell, the genius of Bud Powell. You might be detecting a theme here where we keep jumping back and forth from, hard bop and jazz to sort of cutting-edge rock music. If you would call it that, or whatever you would call it. Hold on.
Left of center.
Well, I don't know, I feel like it is kind of center. I'm not finding... I guess it might be a compilation. I'm not finding the genius of Bud Powell here. I included the genius of Bud Powell because it was a record that I owned. So, but, these days it's like there is another record I'm going to mention in a minute that you can't find. But anyway, in the 70s it came out, The Genius of Bud Powell, and it was his compilation, and his song Tempest Fugit. And, to me he was set the template for bebop. Piano player, like true bebop piano player. And there's other guys. I love Hampton Hawes, just unbelievable. And you can't beat R. Tatum, and there's lots of guys. Bud Powell there's nobody like Bud Powell. So, genius of Bud Powell, if you could find it, but there's many Bud Powell albums that are amazing. Okay, so then my next one is Charlie Parker, The Very Best of Bird. That came out on Warner Brothers in the 70s, so that's the only reason I pick it is I bought it. But the closest thing to that you can get now is called The Complete Best of Savoy and Dial Studio Recordings, Charlie Parker. And then I also have to throw in an album called Bird and Diz, which you might know. But Bird and Diz is a very famous record. Because it's you know, Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, and they're doing Mohawk and Oscar for Treadwell and Leapfrog, and like just sort of these songs that are just so, so important to what was then the cutting edge of this new music that nobody even knew what the fuck it was, mm-hmm. you know, which was later to be called bebop. But if you get the best of Complete Savoy and Dial, you know, you get Coco, which is his version of Cherokee, which is insane. Moose the Mooch, Yardbird Suite, Ornithology, Night in Tunisia, Cool Blues, Relaxing the Camarillo, Chasing the Bird, Cheryl, Milestones, Appraisable Use, Grapple from the Apple. I could keep going and going. It's Parker's Mood, Alicia, Quasimodo. You know, you want one Charlie Parker record? You know, if you could only have one, you'd be doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
Relax in the camera, I'm forget it. Okay, number 26, The Who. Who's next? What can you say?
It's a perfect record.
It's a perfect record.
Yeah.
It was nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Nothing like that. Mm-hmm. When we heard Bob O'Reilly for the first time,
mm-hmm.
I get chills thinking about it.
Yeah. It still sounds brand new. It still sounds like a new record.
Absolutely. And live, because it was cut that way.
Yep.
What an album. And it came out of a failure, as you know.
Yeah, came out of that Lifehouse thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to Pete, it was like, oh, God, like, I can't believe my shit.
I can't
believe
I failed. Apart. Yeah, he thought he failed.
And I failed, and now I have to put out this piece of shit called Who's Next? Yeah, which, like, is, I had to pick the best songs from Lifehouse. So Bob O'Reilly, second song is Bargain. Yeah.
Yeah.
That song's okay.
Yeah. It's a filler.
Third song is Love Ain't For Keeping. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's just fucking ridiculous.
It's such an amazing record. It's a honestly, I probably listen to the record 15 times a year, 20 times a year.
That's easy. So cool.
Easy.
And then you got My Wife, which is fun. You know, John Entwistle. Yeah. Song is over. Forget it.
Yeah.
You can't get better than that. Going Mobile? Like, is there something better than that? And then we didn't even, you know, you haven't even gotten up to Behind Blue Eyes,
mm-hmm.
and Won't Get Fooled Again.
Yeah.
So, who's next? Just forget about it. Yeah. You know, like, and again, like, you know, I was of the age, and so are you, that came out, and it was a new album.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody would say, did you hear the Who's new album called Who's Next? Put it on. And you'd go, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess this is how to make a rock album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a blueprint.
This is how to write a song.
Yeah, yeah, it's a blueprint. And one of my all-time favorite album covers.
Oh, yeah. Well, and play on words, you know, Who's Next? Yeah.
It's who's great.
Gonna pee on Who's going to pee on the monolith?
Such all a right. great record. And then, you know, honorable mention, I'd have to put Tommy.
Well, yeah. I mean, I saw The Who in 68 when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to see Keith, and that was amazing. And Tommy's just nuts. You know, it's a towering achievement.
The first, amazing. Really the amazing first concept record, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, it's a double, you know, and Pinball was, you know, was the single.
Yeah, I still have the original Decca 45 of that.
Wow. Yeah, I have my original record that I bought when it came.
Flipside was a song called, it was a Keith Moon song called Dogs Part 2.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember that track?
I remember the name.
The drums are just, he's insane on that. It's pretty much an instrumental and he's barking on it. It's just great.
Okay. All right. We're only going to go like another 12.
okay, go.
T-Bone Walker, T-Bone Blues.
Okay.
T-Bone Blues came out pretty far along in T-Bone's career. It's an Atlantic record.
Mm-hmm.
Barney Kessel plays on it.
And there'd be no Chuck Berry without T-Bone Walker.
Well, that's for sure. There, you know, a lot of shit with that.
Gory Carter, too. Remember Gory Carter?
I know.
He had a track called Rock a While, came out in 1948,
49. Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
And it's Chuck Berry before there was Chuck Berry. It's proto-Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
I wonder if Chuck heard that and said, oh, yeah, there, that's what I'm going to do. That and T-Bone and Louis Jordan.
Chuck has said, I believe, that he got it from T-Bone and he got it from Oscar Moore. You know, a lot of guys got it from Oscar Moore, who was playing with Nat King Cole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what B.B. King said, you know, that T-Bone and Oscar Moore that made him play single note solos. But this album came out in 59, so I didn't hear it till way later. You know, I heard it in the 70s.
Mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. And I had heard of T-Bone Walker from Stormy Monday and
right.
a few other things, you know, whatchamacallit, T-Bone Shuffle, you know.
Yeah.
But this got poppy and salty. What's that song? There's a Muddy Waters song called Walking by Myself.
Mm-hmm.
Walking by myself, I hope you understand. I just want to be your loving man. So T-Bone has a song called Why Not? And it goes, why not? Why not, baby? It's Walking by Myself. Walking by Myself, yes. Because there's also Walking Blues. But anyway, T-Bone Blues got T-Bone Shuffle, Playing a Little Girl, T-Bone Special, Mean Old World, another version of Stormy Monday, and then a thing called Two Bones and a Pick, and that's Kessel takes a solo on that. And it's just great. And there's a song called Blues Rock, you know, 1959. It's just great. So good. Okay. Joni Mitchell, Blue.
Yeah.
Just
for the alternate tunings.
I guess, although I didn't know shit, you know. I mean,
like, what the fuck was she doing?
It's on my list because it was just too important, you know.
Yeah.
As a kid, you know, Rivers, just, I can't even hear it without crying. It's too much.
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie, my daughter's 33. It's her favorite song in the world. Case of You. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
California.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
another one of the great American songwriters.
Although she's Canadian, you know.
Oh,
that, right?
That's right. She is, isn't she? Yeah, but
I thought you were joking.
No, I wasn't. She's just phenomenal. I mean,
it's totally unique. There's nobody like
completely,
her.
Completely, yeah.
The fucking genius. So that record's just too big. Okay. Next. We're only up to 29.
Real quick, going back to Joni for a second, my favorite live band, I saw her at Forest Hills, the tennis stadium, with Pat Metheny, Lyle Mays,
Jocko,
Brecker.
Yeah, man.
I can't remember who was on drums. I can't remember.
Probably Don Elias.
Maybe.
Shadows and Light.
Yeah, Shadows and Light. Holy shit.
Yeah, man. Okay. Derek and the Dominoes, Layla.
Mm.
Another perfect record to
yes,
me.
Yes, absolutely.
As long as you don't play the last song on side two, Thorn Tree in a Garden, which nobody would play. Because it comes after Layla. So, like, why would you want to hear anything after the song Layla?
Yeah.
But we used to play every song that album, or try to.
Yeah.
You know, I Looked Away, Tell the Truth.
Right.
Keep on Growing.
That's funny. I just heard David Grissom say the same thing. He played every song on that record.
It's too amazing.
Yeah.
Bell Bottom Blues, this song is amazing. Amazing. It's just phenomenal. Eric's playing is phenomenal. And some people argue it's the best Duane Allman album.
Yeah. I think so. That and Live at the Fillmore.
I mean, Duane's contribution to the story is he came in, like, they were sort of you know, flatter than a pancake. And Duane came in and supercharged everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing changed. And he came up with the lick for Layla because it's as the years go passing by. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do, there ain't nothing I can do.
Mm-hmm.
He played it fast. And then their version of Little Wing is Duane's playing on the intro. It's completely crazy. Like, it's unbelievably amazing. Oh. Okay, one I already mentioned, John Mayall, Eric Clapton, Blues Breakers, you know, Hideaway, and...
the Beano record?
Yeah, Stepping Out, whatchamacallit, It Ain't Right, Little Girl,
mm-hmm.
Double Crossing Time, you know, forget it, you know, it's unbelievable. It's some of the greatest guitar playing ever, and tone and everything. Okay, can't leave this one out. The Doors, Waiting for the Sun. In 68, I love the fucking Doors. And what's interesting about Waiting for the Sun is the song Waiting for the Sun is not on the album. So it's kind of weird that they named the album Waiting for the Sun and Waiting for the Sun is not on the album, which is a great song. But I'm 12, 1968, and the Doors were exceptionally cool. And Hello, I Love You was the hit. It's great. Love Street, song's phenomenal. Not to Touch the Earth is, you know, the President's Corpse is in the back of the car. You know, that's Jim's poetry. Summer's Almost Gone, Wintertime Love, Unknown Soldier is incredible. Spanish Caravan, My Wild Love, We Could Be So Good Together, Yes, The River Knows, and 5-1. 5-1, baby. So, big record for me when I was 12, smoking Marlboros, listening to Waiting for the Sun. Okay, I mentioned this earlier, ELP Tarkus.
Mm-hmm.
It was just cutting edge music that was, you know, so challenging. And if you were a musician, it really twisted your brain to, like, you know, you have a lot to learn if you want to wrap your head around this music and understand it. You know, all of these, every single thing we've talked about is a throwing down of the gauntlet by an incredibly distinct icon, you know, iconoclastic musician,
mm-hmm.
who changed the rules of the game, mm-hmm. you know,
and demanded to be listened to.
Yeah. Although, you know, in time, people wrote off progressive music because, you know, it was, you know, bloated or overdone, and you know, spend a year making a record and stuff like that. But, you know, it didn't matter to me. I didn't like everything. I had friends that were King Crimson fanatics and loved every album. That wasn't me, but I did like the first album a lot. And ELP got cornier as they went on, but they were still, it's just incredible musicianship, you know. And I saw them live in 71, and it was one of the most amazing things imaginable. What Keith Emerson did was, mm-hmm. so anyhow, Tarkus is brilliant, beautifully recorded too. Eddie Ofert, I think it's at Olympic, but I'm not 100% sure. Okay, next, Alan Holdsworth, IOU.
Yeah, man.
I have to pick it because, again, there was nothing like it beforehand. It was the point of demarcation in guitar. I mean, the only thing that was anything like it was, Believe It, Tony Williams with Alan, where I saw Alan with Tony at the Bottom Line. Nobody played like Alan. But when he put out IOU, I bought it from him. He didn't have a record company, and he was selling them out of a box for $5. And he played this little tiny club in New York, I think it was 81 or 82, called Trax. Place that held less than 100 people.
I remember it.
And I think Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth were there because it was right after that Eddie was able to get Alan that. deal.
Didn't Eddie finance IOU?
I don't believe so.
I thought that's why it was called IOU.
Somebody financed it, but I don't think it was Eddie. We could look it up.
Yeah, I was talking to Brad about that. I think he said that. We got to look that up. We got to look that up.
I'm looking right now.
Okay.
Let's see what it says. Okay, so it came out in 82. So it was 82 that I bought it from him for $5 out of a box. And unfortunately, there's like no information on them.
I got to go back and listen to that interview I did with Brad Tolinsky about it. Because I think he said that. I think it's actually in his book that, what was it called, Eruption?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's in there. Yeah, I got to look that up. We will get back to you humans about that.
Hold on. Let's see if it comes up. There is a thing here.
We should text him. And piss him off on a Saturday.
Well, I'd have to read too much to try to figure out what it is or what. Oh, I think it was called IOU. Because he said that they would play places and make no money. No one would come and hear them. And Alan felt bad or something like that. You know, they'd go clubs and like nobody would show up. Mm-hmm. So it's something like that. We're going to have to get back. But no, yeah. I do not think Eddie had anything to do with financing this. Because I bought it from Alan out of a box and he didn't have a record deal.
Right.
And then he got a record deal and it got put out on some label.
Yeah, it's a great record.
But anyway, all right.
A whole nother mindset than the UK record.
Well, the UK record, I saw them live in Central Park. Alan was supposedly miserable in that band. And, you know, John Wetton is already sort of like In the Dead of Night. Isn't that far away from Heat of the Moment by Asia. Just isn't. And Alan wasn't into it. And Alan just was too much of his own man to be in a band. Mm-hmm. And so UK, it didn't really work out, you know. Yeah. And it sounds dated, to tell you the truth. Like, I listened to it not that long ago.
Oh, I agree with you.
It was kind of painful to listen to.
Yeah.
Whereas IOU sounds fresh as a fucking date.
Yeah, that sounds new.
Okay. Wes Montgomery, Boss Guitar. Why would I pick that? Aside from the fact that every Wes Montgomery
album, that's the truth right there, yeah.
It's indispensable and, you know, they all are amazing in every way. Mm-hmm. But Boss Guitar was the first one that I heard. And I just listened to it yesterday. It'll never stop amazing me.
That was one of Pat's early influences, right?
Well, Pat Metheny, the first thing he did when he was 14 was go out and play with older guys and just play Wes's solos.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me when I interviewed him in 90 that he could see really quickly that the other musicians didn't think it was cool, you know, that he was just up there, you know, parroting.
Copying licks,
Wes solos. And he said, so this is what he said to me in 90. He goes, so then I realized I was going to have to make up my own solos. And anything that I would do would suck compared to Wes. And then he goes, well, that's still true. Which is hilarious, right?
That is hilarious.
In 1990.
Yeah, really. Well, that's 1990. Oh, we froze up. All right, we're back on.
Okay, so let me get my list back. Um,
What'd you say?
We're finally coming toward the end.
Okay.
So anyway, we're finally coming toward the end of this journey, this 3.5-hour journey. So Wes Boss Guitar, it's just the greatest. And we were just talking about Pat Metheny. So my next entry on here is Pat Metheny, Bright Size Life.
With Jaco and Bob Moses.
Yes. Hold on. Let's see if this lets me do this. Oh, it did. That's nice of them. Hold on. I have to try something for a second. Because I don't want this to just start playing, and I think it's going to. Hold on.
Hello, I'm Pat.
Yeah, I knew it would. All right. Bright Size Life, Pat Metheny.
Did you know that right now?
Hey, come on.
That's Patrick Stewart.
Disaster. I did know that. Okay, stop. Bright Size Life, because it was the first Pat Metheny record I heard, and it has Jaco Pastorius, so it's my introduction to Jaco as well. And you know, same thing like Wes, or it's true with Wes, yes, but same with Alan Holdsworth. That Pat played in a completely unique way that we hadn't heard before. You know, it was a sound and approach. Later on, I realized how influenced by Mick Goodrick he was, who Mick just passed very recently. And when you listen to Mick with, my brain is failing me. You know, a vibes player, Gary.
Gary Burton.
Yeah. You know, you can hear Pat had learned a lot from Mick. But, it's just an amazing record, and I saw Pat around that time. I saw him in 77 when he only had one album out, or maybe two, and he was opening for Jean LeCroix. Yeah. I saw him open for Jean LeCroix. And then the other record, I mean, I love all of Pat's records, and I did the Pat Metheny songbook. Like the size of a phone book, and it took years and years and years, and I got to know Pat and work with him a lot. It was great. But he made an album called Rejoicing, I think in 1980, with Charlie Hayden and Billy Higgins.
Oh,
playing some Ornette tunes and some other stuff. And Pat doesn't like Rejoicing because he doesn't like the sound of it. He doesn't like the way it was mixed. But I told him, I don't care. You know, I said the playing is just completely nuts, and the song, everything. It's a perfect album. It's amazing. Okay, last one. Even though we could have, we just had Victorious, its first album.
You're gonna have to repeat that. You dropped out.
And again, like if there's a uniting theme. Oh, I'm sorry.
Repeat that.
Should we go back on the computer?
If you can.
Go back on the computer?
If you can.
Let's go back on the computer.
Okay. Okay, your last one.
So, last one is Jaco Pastorius, his first album. And so the uniting theme here, I think, is that, every one of these people that we've mentioned, and we've mentioned quite a few, did something that no one else did before, and they have completely unique voices. Mm-hmm. And hold their place in music history as being these pillars that change the direction of music through the strength of their uniqueness and personality. Mm-hmm. And perseverance of wanting to do that. I need to say something that no one said. It's my own thing.
Right.
Put it down.
Right. Well, you have a favorite track off of that Jaco record?
Say it one more time.
Do you have a favorite track off the Jaco record?
Well, Donnelly is just nuts. Yeah. Like we've never heard anybody, do that.
Mm-hmm.
And forever, it's going to sound impossible. And then Portrait of Tracy is the same deal.
Portrait of Tracy.
No one did any of that. No one did that.
Yeah.
No one had done it.
Yep.
And so
those two things right away were like, if I consider myself a serious musician, or to whatever degree to which I consider myself a serious musician, I should try to learn this shit. And so I did, you know. I did the best I could trying to play Donnelly. And same thing with Teen Town, you know.
Yeah, Teen Town, yeah.
Weather Report, because it was all about the bass and all about Jaco. And Portraits of Tracy. My wife's name is Tracy. So it was a song she always liked. So hard to do. Oh, my God.
Oh, crazy.
All those harmonics. Like, yeah. I mean, he's a genius. You know, you can't be denied. And my introduction to Jaco, I had heard the name, very unique name, but there's this new bass player named Jaco Pastorius, and he's like, you know, like, you think Stanley Clark is great? Well, you know, because he was like the big name in jazz, electric bass at the time. And but I didn't hear anything, and then I walked into a record store, and an album was on called All American Alien Boy by Ian Hunter. Do you know that album?
I do.
Okay. So the title song, they do a verse and a chorus, and then it goes into a bass solo, like immediately. And the bass solo is amazing. And I was in the record store standing there going, I bet this is that Jaco guy, because I've never heard anyone play bass like this.
Right.
Fretless, the electric bass. I just played it for my keyboard player the other day. He had never heard it. And he was, you know, like, it was nuts that it was on a record that was on the, like, a rock and roll record that was on the radio, FM radio at the time. Like, what a, Ian Hunter's the coolest, man. What a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
So, anyhow. Come On, Come Over is a thing. Hold on a sec.
What'd you think of the Continuum record?
Oh, the album Continuum?
Yeah.
Now, wait, what is that?
That's the... That, well, no, that wasn't the second... What was the album after the first record? His first solo record? He had another
Word of Mouth.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Well, things started going off the rails kind of quick.
Yeah.
For Jaco. But I just brought the record up. And so, you know, you've got Donnelly. Then you got Come On, Come Over. It's with Sam and Dave. It's ridiculous. Then you have Continuum, which... He played like that on the Bright Side's Life record a little bit. Is it? It's not Midwestern Night's Dream, is it? I'm not sure what the name of the song is, but he, you know, where he plays the end, the coda, that real melodic with a flange on the bass. So that Continuum thing, like we heard a little bit, Kuru and Speak Like a Child is nuts, completely nuts. And you got Herbie Hancock. Portrait of Tracy, Opus Pocus is amazing. Ocon Kali, he trumpets with the steel pan.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Like, forget it. Forget it.
Totally.
So... And now, do you know an album called Trialogue Live, Albert Mangelsdorf?
No.
Okay, so it's Trialogue, T-R-I-O-L-O-G-U-E, Live, Albert Mangelsdorf, M-A-N-G-L-E-S-D-O-R-F-F, I believe. And live from Montreux, and he's a German experimental trombone player, and with Jaco Pastorius from 1976. So it's important that it's 1976 Jaco, just like his album.
Mm-hmm.
And Alphonse Mouzon on drums. That's the band. Just forget it. Mangelsdorf is amazing, like unbelievable. But Alphonse Mouzon's drumming and Jaco's bass playing. Jaco's wearing a Phillies cap. You can see it on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
Oh, it is? Okay. So I know. Okay. I can go here because that's not going to be on iTunes Music.
It is, I think.
Is it?
I think it is.
That's insane.
I think you can look up Mangelsdorf and it might be there. Let me see if it is.
I'm going to do the same thing.
I might not have spelled it right. Hold on.
There it is.
Trialog Live. It's so amazing. Oh my God. So, anyhow, that was my list of 10.
Okay. Wow, here it is. Oh my God.
And I had forgotten to put on there the first Plastic Ono Band album, which is, but we did discuss it. So, anyway.
Cool.
Those were 50 albums, 60 albums. I don't really know what it was.
I think it was close to 60, yeah.
Sorry, Mark.
No, I love it, man.
My apologies.
I love it. You always give me gold. You give me gold all the time. I love you for that.
Well, I mean, you know, if we were to sum up, gee, what do you like? Well, I like the Beatles and the Stones. And I like Charlie Parker and Miles Davis and Bob Dylan.
And the band.
And the band. And
Joni.
And Ornette Coleman. And Bud Powell.
Neil Young.
And Neil Young and Joni Mitchell. And I mean, we didn't even get to like Merle Haggard and
yeah,
George Jones. And the only reason those guys aren't on there is because it's just a personal thing. Like, I mean, I love that stuff so much.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I even made a little note at the bottom where I didn't talk about Doc Watson, who was so me. The essential Doc Watson, that double album, we would listen to all the time and try to play those songs all the time. And my mom was really into classical guitar and had Segovia records. And so, you know, I couldn't even pick one. I wouldn't even know a particular record. But the guitar was like huge in my house before I even picked a note.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and my mother would talk about it. She played piano, but she said, oh, there's nothing like a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Like the most expressive, emotive, personal instrument.
Yeah.
It's just a string vibrating. She played me Chet Atkins records, and but she loved jazz and singing, and loved Ella Fitzgerald and Tony Bennett, and you know. So I grew up with all that and loved it. But early on, I heard Rodriguez Concerto de Aranjuez, very famous piece played by Narciso Yepes. And then I got turned on to Pepe Romero and the Romero brothers after that. And so, you know, and then you've got John Williams, and then you could get into Julian Bream and like start to get this whole other world of why the guitar is like this endless thing. Like it's endless.
It's the onion you forever peel.
I was jamming with some buddies the other night. These guys, my oldest friends from, you know, like this one guitar player, we started playing together when we were 11, you know, 55 years ago. And he started talking about the Leo Kottke, John Fahey album, Greenhouse. And I remember it in his house the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I've never heard anything like this. Like, it's just incredible. Yeah. So cool. And so, you know, this is the thing, you know, with the guitar. Jeff Beck had a great line. He said, when you find something cool on the guitar, do not give yourself any credit because it was already there. And you just got lucky and you found it.
It's so true. That is so freaking true.
I mean, I don't mind giving myself a little credit if I figure out something cool on the guitar. But what a great point. It's like it was already there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other time, that is the famous quote that gets attributed to Chet Atkins and Joe Pass, which is, you know, we'll say Chet Atkins is playing And a guy walks up and he goes, Chet, that guitar sounds amazing. And then he stops playing and he goes, how's it sound now?
That's cool. You know who I've been listening? I've been going down a rabbit hole listening to is Buddy Merrill. Remember Buddy Merrill?
Oh, sure.
From the Lawrence Welk show.
Yeah, Buddy Merrill's terrific. And
so good. Those
guys, like if you start to get into like Grady Martin, you know, or Thumbs Carlisle, you know, it's like you can't believe it. Or like fucking Merle Travis, you know, like you mentioned Red Volkert. I mean, I love Red Volkert.
Oh, and, he's so good.
Somebody hit me to a record. I'm sure you're familiar with Danny Gatt and the Humbler.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one that came out called The Real Humbler?
Mm-mm.
I'll send it to you. Somebody just hit me to it the other day. And it's funny because you remember Malibu?
Hell yeah.
That's where it was recorded.
No shit.
It's Robert Gordon in 1981 at the Malibu with Danny Gatton. And Lance Quinn was the other guitar player, the guy who opened the power station. But he was actually a phenomenal guitar player. I didn't know that. And so it came out, and it's called The Real Humbler. You can find it. But I can send it to you.
I want a copy of that gig that you did.
Band of Gypsies.
Yeah, I want the Band of Gypsies. Man, I want to hear that.
Well, and then the whole second half of it's crazy because it's like the best of Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are some clams and stuff, but what can you do, you know?
That's how, I mean, everybody gets that. Even Hendrix had that.
And I was getting mad at myself because when I, you know, 45 years ago, we played those with songs we played all the time, so I knew them a lot better, and we'd be playing them, and I'd be thinking, what comes next? Like, what are you supposed to do now? And when we did the gig, I was a lot better than the rehearsal two nights before. The rehearsal, I was like, I can't remember, like, any of the licks that Jimmy played. And it sucks to me, like, to play the wrong licks, you know? But then on the gig, like, you'll hear on Who Knows, like, I'd get on a run where, like, they were all sort of coming to me in a row. And it's fun. And even when they get screwed up and, like, put in the wrong order, it's still fun because it's like, you know, it's at least close. You'll see. It's close to the thing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, all right. I will send it to you. And
cool.
You have the patience of a saint, my friend. Nobody like you, Mark.
I really appreciate your generosity.
Well, there's nothing more fun for me than this.
Oh, I love this.
But I mean, it's honest, you know. You know, I can't pick 10. I can't. And the fact that you gave me the room to go on and on and on, and you split this into 55 parts or don't, throw it all away. You know, I interviewed Scofield so many times, and not that many of those interviews ended up getting printed, and was no fault of my own. But he didn't get mad at me. But one day he said to me, he goes, you know, are you doing anything with these interviews? Or are you just doing them for your own fun and like listening to them in your basement like later? And I go, I know it seems that way because I'll pitch the story to a, you know, an editor and then, you know, then somehow it doesn't end up getting run. So that happened a few times. So it was his joke. I go, oh, yeah, at home I have them all. I just read them to myself.
This has been great. Thank you, man.
No, thank you. Really fun. And if anybody is compelled to actually listen to this whole thing, and you know,
I'm going to create for the top 10. I'm going to create a Spotify playlist.
Oh man, yeah, that's cool.
And that's going to go out there. It's going to be Guitar Radio Show Andy Elidor's top 10.
Yeah,
that's going to be fun. I'm going to attach the link to the show notes. So.
Oh, well, that's cool. Well, thank you, Mark.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for spending so much time today. It's always such a pleasure.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I left out some records, so I'll call you back.
Okay.
No.
No. I'll take it on.
It's like George says on one of those Beatles Christmas records, after Paul finishes talking, he goes, "Thank you, Paul.
We'll phone you.
We'll phone you."
That's one of my favorite lines. "Thank you, Paul. We'll phone you."
I'd like to thank everybody for going to see the film. We had a quiet time making it. Actually, we had a great time. And there's another one going to be out soon. This time it's going to be in color.
In color.
Hope you go see that one
too. He really tapped into his Scottish thing right there. In color.
This time it's going to be in color. Well, I like where John says, I can't remember right now. He's like, "Thank you, Paul." "I'd like to write back to each of you personally, but I haven't enough pens."
Yeah.
He says, "I've written a book."
It says here.
"It was very handy."
Yeah. "Oh, it sold a lot of copies," or something like that. He says, that was very handy.
Yeah, it was very handy. There's another one out soon. Hope you buy that one.
Two.
It'll be the usual rubbish, but it won't cost much. That's the bargain we're going to strike up, you see. And Paul goes, "Did you write that yourself?" And he goes, "No.
It's somebody's bad hand wrote it. I use that line a lot.
And I'll hand you over to Paul, who will speak to you now with his voice. I know. And then they say, "Ringo, what have we done this year, Ringo?" "Well, I can see we haven't shaved again." "We've been away. And like last year, we've been to Australia and New Zealand and New Zealand and Australia."
Those are such a gift, those Christmas messages, man. I love them. I had them as a bootleg years ago when you couldn't get them.
Me too. I got it in like 1979 or 80. I bought it in a bootleg shop on an LP of all of them. And that's the only way I could have gotten them.
Yeah. Was that Record Stop on Portion Road?
No, it was New York City. We used to go.
Oh, okay.
Into the city.
Bleak and Bob's.
In 1980, I lived in New York City, so I think I was living in the city when I bought that. And I also bought a bootleg called Never Fade, Jimi Hendrix, a double, which was all the BBC shit that hadn't.
Oh, that out. Later came out.
Yeah, and that was a great bootleg. But there was a few bootleg shops. One was called Farfold Records, and it was underground, like, you know.
Oh, to walk down.
Down from the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And, I can't remember now. Later on, there was other ones like Golden Disc, but I guess Titus Oakes, like, you know, would
Titus
had bootlegs on Long Island. Yeah. I didn't learn that till later in the '70s. Yeah. You know, we're going to the
even Bleaker Bob's had some stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, all right, Mark.
All right, man. Peace. Happy New Year, man, to you and your family.
Happy New Year to you. Have a great night. Tomorrow's a new year.
Here we go again.
All right, man. Thanks. Peace.
All right. See ya.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.